how do you feel that the Happy Talk band has managed to show up in people's conscious? I mean, it seems fairly recent. Of course, it's a number of years now, but at what point did it start to really stretch out or become a thing that people were paying attention to?
Well, those early shows we had, we never had a great following. I was super chicken. I was, as far as being on stage, my stage fright was horrible. As far as like knee shaking and that kind of thing, I felt like my knees were shaking so hard, people must be able to see it, but no one can, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad as Elvis.
The Elvis? Oh yeah, not like that. No, that was great knee shaking. Is that where his knees came from? Or was stage fright? Yeah. That'd be funny if that was the case. That'd be great. We had a pretty immediate. What I noticed was that after live shows, people would recognize lyrics and repeat them back to me before we had recorded. You know what I mean? And at that point, I thought that was a good sign because in live shows, it's hard to understand what people are saying a lot of the time, and people attaching themselves to songs and starting to know songs before we actually recorded, knowing the lyrics and singing along, and that was a good sign. And that was after shows at Dragon's Den and like Checkpoints and Hi Ho, and then eventually El Matador and Circle Bar too. Circle Bar was great because I started working there not that long after the band started, and Kelly Keller was very encouraging with the band. She said a very nice compliment. You guys are like a young Rolling Stones, which I think she was saying to be very nice, just
totally
to be
nice,
but it was a very nice thing to say nonetheless.
Kelly was very supportive.
Yeah.
She
also let me hear Station Wagon for trips too,
really?
Which was nice. And then I ended up inheriting.
Why, you guys
were
going on the road already at that point?
Well, we played up like Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and she lent us the Station Wagon for a couple shows like that. And then after she passed, I ended up buying the Station Wagon from the bar for like basically inheriting it.
Right. Yeah. So you were a bartender at the Circle Bar.
Yeah.
Now, a
white Crown Vic 89 Station Wagon with a cop engine guitar.
Now, the kind of sound that you've been driving on that band, I mean, for stuff in this town, it's very signature. You're in a way, now maybe there's something to this. In my head, as far as my consciousness of the music scene, which is only one listener, I come to you again.
What a listener, Jonathan.
But I don't know a lot. But so, you know. But I'm interested. But my associations have to do with, and you were playing shows at that point with a lot of guests at Morning 40 Federation and Clinton Agent and these kinds of scenes. And how did you choose the kind of sound that you're making behind the songs that you write?
Yeah.
Because it's different than their work.
Right. No, I know. Yeah. I had songs that I wanted to be like a bicycle, you know, like a bicycle, like a casual little ride. And I had songs I wanted to be a race car, you know, it'd be really fast and fucking hard and loud and mean. And then I wanted some songs to be both. And I've always had a part of me that wants to be a rock and roll guy, but knows that I'm really a country guy, you know. But I want to be have that force and that. That verve, you know, and now I don't really feel that way so much anymore. But then I really did. It was like I wanted to prove something to something, you know, something to someone or something. And that was like to sing like a rock star, to sing like a metal guy that I used to love when I was younger. You know what I mean? Or like a punk guy or whatever. I wanted to speak like an element of violence. But then also like. You know, a certain amount of vanity that you realize that, like, you know, lyrics are my strongest point, and when you're screaming everything, then the words get buried, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, I just wanted both. I wanted both. I wanted a lot of quiet, loud, you know, force when you needed it, but then really pretty when you needed it, too.
You mentioned three styles here. I guess they must have had a big impact, which are country music, rock and roll, and punk music.
Right. Well, I mean, like, also what I didn't mention was musical background as a kid. When I was, like, really young, the kids I were hanging out with, it was all metal. And then after that...
Were you into the metal?
Some. I never grew my hair out. But, yeah, but, like, more like, you know, like Ronnie James Dio, Iron Maiden, you know, more of the like kind of devil-y kind of shit, you know, way back when, because I was playing D&D, you know, kind of went with that. And then later on, punk rock, I was around punk rock kids. And I liked the message of some of that stuff. I liked the simplicity of it. And then years after that, when I moved back to California from New Orleans, I worked at this place in Felton, up in the mountains above Santa Cruz.
I used to play in Felton.
A place called the Cowboy Diner. I don't know if you remember this place. Okay, well, I was one of the first cooks there when that place opened. And they had the satellite radio, and they played classic country. And that's music I'd never really been around at all. And suddenly I started hearing all these, you know, like, you know, the first time I heard Townes Van Zandt was there. Hank Williams was, you know, probably not the first time I heard Hank Williams, but, you know, a lot of Johnny Cash, lots of, you know, Lefty Frizzell, really good, was on the satellite radio. And I'm like, these are goddamn good songs. That's part of what broke up my band in Santa Cruz, was I started wanting to write country songs, playing with these kind of punk kids, you know what I mean? Who are like, oh, what the fuck is this noise, you know?
It's funny that they didn't see a relationship.
No, of course, and they, that would have been nice.
Did you see a relationship?
No. No. I didn't. I didn't really understand it that. Now I understand how those two things can be. I'm a slow learner with that.
How about
shit.
Between the boxer and all that?
The boxer and the country. I guess I could see the folk and the country, but the country for me just, it was like a punk rock kid, like jumps into a fight, just like throwing fists wildly everywhere and kicking and screaming and biting.
Yeah.
And then a country song is like stepping up and throwing one perfect fucking punch. One perfect punch. And being absolutely fearless, you know? Because if you're not afraid, you just know how to throw that one punch. If you're afraid, you jump in with the teeth and elbows and knees and feet, you know? And it was an absolute calm about it, you know? And also a tragedy about it, too, that I like, you know? And maybe those two things are connected. It was calm because it had no more love for itself, you know? I don't know.
Okay. And so then,
what's Phil?
Yeah, I really do want more. At a certain point, you know, you got into, you ended up making a recording. How do you like recording if you don't like playing live that much?
I don't like recording that much either, man.
That's a lot of trouble. So it means that, I don't know, it seems to indicate to me that you got to get this stuff out because you can't stand any of the modes of getting it out.
I like writing songs, man.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I like playing out live when everything's right. But I feel like it's like crazy chemistry. Like I have to eat the right meal, like the exact right amount of time before I play, and then drink the right amount, and then smoke the right amount of cigarettes, and then have the right kind of conversation before.
Yeah.
And then have everyone else in the right mood, and that's just this weird chemistry. But the thing is, I mean, I'm full of shit in a way, because on a good night with a good crowd, by song 3, I feel pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
And by song 12, I feel really great. You know, most of the time I do, you know. And it was early on, it sucked. And early on, I was just pretty much mortified and terrified and I don't know, almost like this Protestant shame of like drawing attention to yourself kind of thing. I don't know, you know, like I don't
yeah,
know.
Okay,
yeah.
It involves too much pride.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think you're related to these country artists that way?
Maybe some, yeah.
Kind of, you know,
yeah.
Swagger mixed with religious piety. Or
right.
Like, you know.
Yep.
When you go to do the recordings, that showed up late on, right? Earlier recordings went down with Piety.
It was one recording before that. Oh, fuck. What's the name of the guy? Oh, I'm embarrassed. I can't remember his name. But the first recording we did was a 4-song thing on tape in Mid-City at this guy's studio that ended up flooding out after the storm, so he lost the shit later. But it was around for a while. A little 4-song disc. It was Mugger's Waltz.
Mugger's Waltz was already written there. Great.
Yeah, Mugger's Waltz. No, not Mugger's Waltz. Sorry, Bank Robber's Waltz.
Okay.
Bank Robber's Waltz, different one. Jill, Waiting Song. And I can't remember the other. Timeshare. Those 4 songs. So that's Alan LaFleur playing bass on that one. And it was really, we did it one night, you know, one night, stayed up all night and did this one recording, and then and that's it, you know. But then the next one was with Mike West down at the Pick and Parlor.
Right.
In the Ninth Ward. And that was after Megan had left town. And that was, you know, which also was why the band started too, is when Megan left. And that was, Mike was great to work with. He really was, yeah.
Tell me about working with Mike. Why did you
Mike doesn't drink or have any vices other than coffee, as far as I can tell. And he's really, was concerned with our time and money, you know. And he was really good at pushing us to keep on going. You know, come on, lads. He always said, come on, lads. And he was just worked very quickly, but not in a bullying way. It was good. And also, but you know, we'd been playing that material. First records are always that way. All the material is pretty tight because that's the only songs you have.
Yeah. So those have been played.
Right.
So how long was that before you went in to record again?
Then 4 years later, we recorded, and then 3 years later. No, it's been four. Wait. Yeah. Then 4 years later for the next one with Bingham. Mark Bingham actually mixed the first record. Mike.
He mixed the
Mike had a mix, and then we had some disagreements about who liked Mike's mix. I thought it was okay, you know, but I didn't really have a whole lot of opinion about it. But they decided to bring it to Mark, and then Mark mixed it again, and it sounded really good after Mark mixed it. Mm-hmm. And then we went back into Piety again, and for the first time in 2007 or 2006, released it in 2007. And then back again in 2010.
Were you happy with the records after?
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. Like, if they're playing it on a jukebox, I don't want to fucking hear it, you know?
A lot of songwriters.
Well, I mean, I imagine if I put... I don't know, is it that way for you playing guitar? If you hear your guitar part, does it drive you crazy? I think it's my voice that's driving me crazy. It's like, I don't want to hear my own goddamn voice while I'm sitting in a bar.
I'm lucky in as much as I like most of my records.
But do you like hearing your own voice?
I don't sing. I mean, if the Tom Paines record...
Yeah, Tom Paines, for example.
No,
yeah.
I'd rather go crazy.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I think it's my voice that's driving me crazy. It's just my voice.
Yeah, I feel like I've delivered a horrible problem. Like, I have to come up with some kind of justification. I'm a self-psychologist for why it's okay to sound that way, and I must get used to it, you know. It's horrible. You're talking about ugly sound. I can understand that. It's interesting you bring it up. What do you feel is the relationship between your literary, your interest in literature and wanting to write, and the songwriting that you do?
Well, I think that I miss fiction writing, and I've been fucking talking about this forever, how I want to go back into writing fiction again, but currently lack the courage. I think I've always respected great editors, like, you know, like writers who know how to condense a big piece down into a small piece, like, you know, Alexander Block or someone who was like supposedly like would write a 3-page story and then write 500 pages to arrive at those 3 pages. And I feel like songwriting is, you can tell like a story of a lifetime, or, you know, a grand novel of a story in 4 minutes. And I think it's just a beautiful, condensed piece, potentially, you know.
How do you think the music impacts that story, the sound?
Absolutely condensed. It affects the mood of it. And for me, I often start out with music before I start out with words. So, like, I start hearing things in rhyming couplets with music with it, and it seems to be the only way to tell that particular story.
I mean, you know, I'm just wondering, because on the other hand, you know, you like literature, there's the possibility of reading your story with music going on.
Right, no, that's true. Yeah.
But it'd be different, you know.
Yeah. It's true.
A lot of people, it seems like, do you think... when I go to your shows, a lot of people, there's a lot of people know the words to your songs.
Right.
Watch them in the crowd, they're singing. Is that people, did they learn that from watching you a lot or from the records?
I'm guessing from the records, because not that many people come to our shows anymore, it seems.
I like the records. No, they don't go to anybody's shows.
Yeah. I think that, like, people have told me that they like my music for doing laundry and for driving and for cooking and, you know, like, around the house kind of shit. So I think, yeah. And yeah, I love that, man. I mean, that makes me feel better than anything is, like, it's sticking into people's heads, you know, in a good way. It makes me worried when people really like it a lot because it is kind of sad shit, you know, but maybe it's, like, maybe they got similar sentiments about the world or something, too, you know, and that's why they identify or like it. I don't know.
Do you have anywhere that you're trying to take things now? Do you have direction?
Want some whiskey?
Yeah.
I would like to sell a song, Treme, once a year and make $10,000 a pop. Yeah, that'd be nice.
You don't think it would start to seem like too little after you did it?
Well, no, actually, that's way too little. Sorry. I need to sell, like, 6 songs a year at $10,000 a pop. And then maybe bartend for fun.
Yeah.
You know? That would be just about right. I would like to... But then I see people like McMurray and like you and like... You know, working musicians, and you guys bust your fucking asses. You know, you have to play a lot of gigs. Or Chaz, you know, where like, and the thing is, like, the starving artist thing. Not that you guys are starving. And don't get me wrong, neither of you guys are. But you guys gig a lot.
Yeah.
And
give them a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. And the bartending, like, I bitch about it, but goddamn, that's good. It's good money. It's good work.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's not an easy job for a 41-year-old man to do. When I'm carding people and I'm like, I've got abortions older than you, you know? Like, we talked about that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I would like ultimately, yeah, I would like to be able to find a way, I guess, for someone else to be singing my songs, I guess. I don't know. And I mean to talk to Alex about this, why he hasn't pursued this, but, you know, there's people in town. What's his fucking name? The Swedish guy.
Anders
Osborne or John Michael. You know, these are people who are like, you know, working out in Nashville and doing that shit. I could do that. I mean, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be that hard for me. If someone could even say they want to write a song about a dog and a Subaru and an axe murderer, and I'm pretty sure I could write a song about a dog, a Subaru, and an axe murderer, that would be an okay song, you know? Wouldn't be the best song I've ever written, but I don't know. Yeah, I'd like to sell songs. I'd like to make money that way. I'd like to see this band touring more than it does because it hasn't toured for shit. I'd like to see me supporting myself other than bartending, and I don't really know how to do anything other than write songs and sling drinks. And I can cook okay too, I guess.
And that life seems pretty good to you. I think it does.
Yeah, it does. Of course it does, yeah. And the bartending thing, I'm proud to be a bartender. I am. Like, I think it's a noble profession. I really do.
One of the greatest drinking towns in the world.
Absolutely. But I am getting, it is a younger, slightly younger person's game for the shifts I'm doing anyway, you know. Kicks your fucking ass. It's like, you know, being a therapist and a bouncer and an enabler all at the same time is really bizarre, yeah.
Do you use that in your songwriting?
I enable people with all my songs, man.
Okay, a couple more questions. Right. I know you got to go. Over the years, you've been here now 20 years. What kind of changes have you seen? What have you particularly liked over the years in your environment?
Something I was thinking about recently about changes. I got a little bit of time. The other night was 4 a.m. on a Tuesday at Mimi's, or 3 a.m., and this group of fucking backwards hat-wearing, born in 89, frat boy, cocky, daddy's credit card kids come in, and I was like, and this is just Mimi's, which is like the Marigny, whatever, but it's fairly deep Marigny. And I remember when I first moved here, it's like, you kids would have been terrified to come. You wouldn't have come to this neighborhood. You would have been scared to come to this neighborhood. You were told not to cross Esplanade, much less Elysian Fields. Yeah. And I miss that. I miss that, you know, the Frenchman Street is now Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
You know, I miss I mean, well, you know, when you were asking earlier why I stayed here, part of it was the wild, wild west. It was the outlaw aspects of this city, that it was a murder capital, and that it was kind of sketchy. And not that I was even that tough, but I was pretty good at taking care of myself. And now I just feel like this is turning into, you know, goddamn Oakland that used to be a fucking hard town. That's not a hard town anymore. I don't know. I can't even explain it.
How was the hard town appealing to you? Why was it?
Because asshole frat boys that I didn't like were afraid to be in the same bar I was.
I mean, it's interesting because I was in Santa Cruz the same time as you. Santa Cruz didn't have frats.
Well, you know what? I'm using that. Well, you know what I mean? Santa Cruz, they were rich kids, but at least they shared similar politics to me. You know what I mean? At least they were, like, liberal. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm saying, like, you know what I mean? And I'm judging people by their backwards hat, and maybe I'm an asshole for that.
Maybe you're Muslim because you're a bartender.
But, yeah, maybe, yeah. entitled, pretentious white youth is what I'm talking about, I guess. Which I guess is what we're dealing with in Santa Cruz, too, though. So what the fuck? And maybe that's what I am, too. Oh, shit.
Wow. Everything you can learn.
More therapy with Jonathan Frehlich. Full circle.
Wow, there's a lot of action in the bar.
I was going to say, and ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Frehlich's been looking around the bar away from this interview during the entire interview, looking at women the entire time. I would like this to be on record. Looking a little bit distracted, Frehlich.
I
noticed that one girl with her wife beater kind of hiked up. She's kneeling on a bar stool. You can see just the bottom of her tramp stamp, which is something written in Hebrew. Wait, no, it's not.
Wait, do you think she's here for the swingers convention?
No, I don't. She's too young to swing, man. She came along with her parents, yeah.
Yeah, I was asserting this earlier. There's an age, you're too young, so swinging is like somewhere like 40 to 50, I think. Right?
So we're on the right
40
age.
60.
My wife is opposed to swinging, and I am too.
Yeah, right. We talked about this, opposed to swinging.
But what I miss about the old days, too, let's see. Actually, I like what this neighborhood's become, though, to some extent, that it's become, like the Bywater has become, the artist neighborhood. It really has. And there is a lot of talent coming in here. There's people who are priced out of Portland and San Francisco and New York, and they live here now.
Yeah.
And they're talented motherfuckers. There's some great painters and some great writers, and I think that's getting better. I think we're seeing a renaissance here, without a doubt. You know?
I love that.
And that's a beautiful thing.
I love that. It's a positive aspect of it.
Right. By the time you move back, it's going to be golden.
So this comes out of my thing, like, about scenes. Yeah, I love that perspective. Even by the time I move back, he put it on tape, people.
Yeah. Oh, you're coming.
Whatever you put on hard disk. Let's just stick with the neighborhood for one more question.
Yeah.
So we're here at Marky's Bar, and I remember, and there's a lot of. You don't specifically write songs about the neighborhood here.
I have, man. And actually, my first record definitely, I had several references to streets and stuff on my first record. I've never said New Orleans in a song ever.
Uh-huh.
No, but, you know, but I mentioned, like, street names and Charity Hospital and stuff like that. But yeah, some, but not for a while.
Oh, well, over to you. Let's ask this to go for two things. And this is sort of my final question, other than one other. What really one other?
Your penultimate question.
I promise one other. This is the penultimate question. So, you've been here more than 20 years.
Less than 20 years.
Less than
93, yeah.
93, okay. So, what have you liked in music? And what have you liked in the city? What is really specifically poetic? I mean, other than the stuff you mentioned, I mean, perhaps you could paint a more... dreamy picture, but so the first question is really about music and art and that. What particularly in the art and music?
I like music wise.
Literally, you can go.
I like to say, like, for one thing, this bar, for example, and a lot of bars that, like, all the people of different ages playing different styles of music are hanging out at the same bars, watching sports. Like Marky's, for example, watching a baseball game, and you have, like, John Rodley's playing trad jazz, and then you have some guy who's in a fucking metal band, and you have me, and you have, you know what I mean? And everyone's kind of hanging together, and there's you know, people who are between 22 and 62 years old sitting next to each other at a bar talking shit, and they're playing different genres of music. And I haven't lived that many places, but I don't imagine that's going on in a lot of cities where that's happening, where there's working musicians hanging out together and spending their time together. Not even necessarily going to each other's shows, but after those shows are hanging out. I like that very much. As far as recording, I like that you can find anyone playing any instrument for next to nothing to sit in with you and play with you and record, or play a show with you at the last minute. You want a goddamn cellist to come and play with you, you can have a cellist. You want an oboe player, you can have an oboe player. Bagpipes, there it is, harp, whatever, you know? And just the camaraderie here. It's because everyone's losing, no one's being very competitive. Kind of like that. Because, every, you know, that's the great thing about being at the bottom, which the city kind of is in some ways, you know? There's not a whole lot of fight at the bottom, you know?
But in a sense, there's a big winning.
Yeah, sure.
That's good. What were you saying?
I forgot what part two was.
Part two was just a general. That's generally what you like in the city. You really said it was really just about whether what you've liked over the years in art and music and what you've liked in the city is a general thing. So I think you combine them together. Well, the last thing is, do you have anything that you particularly like to talk about?
No, not that I can. I think we talked about everything I wanted to talk about. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Then we'll call it.
All right.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah.
Hope it wasn't too painful.
No, that was fine. You're right. It was just like talking.